This is a production of Netcast Studio, online media for today's society. The new media broadcasting network dedicated to providing you content as it relates to your life. Whether it's technology, sports, educational, cultural, hobbies, or history, Netcast Studio has it all at netcaststudio.com.
Tech of Sports, episode 48 for May 15th, 2013. Q&A. This week on the Tech of Sports, Q&A. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android. Don't forget the Stitcher radio app for all iOS devices. Android and BlackBerry get Stitcher for free with your favorite Netcast Studio shows preloaded. Stitcher Radio, it's an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone and tablet. Stitcher, it's smart radio for your smartphone. The Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. Join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at netcaststudio.com/live, where you can join the chat room, listen to the show live. I'd like to welcome everyone tonight. And as we move through the spring here, a lot of great sports topics, sports technology topics, and sometimes it's hard to make sense of them all, and everybody's got an opinion. So we're going to talk about that tonight, answer some questions, and talk about some relevant topics, and get some opinions. And Steve is here to join me and play Batman to Robin to my Batman, I guess, Steve. Good to have you. And Steve, I'll tell the listeners, I told you I like having you on because a lot of times you prove to be the devil's advocate and give the counterpoint. So that's valuable to have on the show.
Well, thanks for having me on, Rick. But you know, I never have opinion.
No. You haven't met an opinion that you haven't taken head on. So
that's
good to have you on. And Steve, I don't know if you want to. We'll start out with the first question here. And just a lot going on in the world of sports technology. And it doesn't matter which sport, even from baseball, umpires blowing calls and instant replay issues to stuff at the football combines, and it's just concussion issues in football. I heard was driving in sports radio talking the other day, and the hosts were talking about the old concussion in sports topic again. That's never going to die until that gets taken care of, which it may never get taken care of. But Steve, why is technology, you think, so important in sports? And I mean, it's important in other things, entertainment and movies and news and other things. But why do you think that technology is so important in sports?
Two parts to that. One is time continually moves, and along with time, so does technology. You know, we go back, Rick, and look into sports. You know, in terms of, well, let's take the 100-yard dash or now the 110 meters or whatever it's called now. And you look at times then and now, there's been advancements even in sprinting due to technology, whether it's training or technology used in the healthiness of an athlete. Technology pretty much doubles its advancement in speed every 18 months. And it's moving at such a fast pace now that it's just incredible. But the real benefit to technology and sports, I think, is with a lot of the safety initiatives when we're talking about a race car driver or a football player. The safety and health of athletes is really critical today. It hadn't been too many years ago, Rick, in professional football that a defender tackled a guy. Today, it's knocking them off their feet. And there's a difference in that level of, you know, power distribution and all that affects the human body differently. So even though technology is working on advancements in assisting and protecting athletes, I think in a lot of respects, and we'll use football as that example, has become more ferocious also.
Yeah, I think safety has been huge and the advancements have been huge. And, you know, partly what it all comes down to, I think, everybody in sports is looking for an edge. I mean, sports is about winning and losing. And yeah, you're right. It is about safety as well. Now that's been huge in the news, but really the backbone of sports comes down to just getting that little edge when everything else is equal. That little technology edge sometimes can push you over the finish line a little quicker or help you throw something a little further. And I mean, that's really why I think technology moves so quickly, especially in sports, is, I mean, these are, you only have one chance a lot of times at that. And that little bit of technology sometimes will pay dividends, you know, in spades.
Well, I know, you know, you talked about, I drew a blank about those missed baseball calls of recent.
Yeah.
You know, there's still that very human aspect of sports. And then there's also the tech side. And unfortunately, at least I don't see, maybe you do, Rick, in a lot of instances where technology is not truly going to assist, but it could hamper the progress of professional sports.
It could. I mean, as far as the making games and events last longer, I think that's one of the number one drawbacks. It sometimes to look at all the technology and look at plays, and that takes time, and we have short attention spans a lot of times, and things are made for TV now, so they try to fit it in that block of programming. So too much technology, like too much of anything, can be bad, but I think there's certain instances where maybe we're not using yet the technology that's available to its fullest extent. And, you know, with so much money and so much at stake in these sporting events, it's I think it's pretty important. That's a huge topic. And Steve, you want to go on to number two there?
Before the show, you and I were talking about some things, and, you know, today with our constant connectivity with the internet through our mobile devices or our desktop or any other apparatus we might have, social media now being the kingpin of information. And we look at, you know, Twitter and Facebook and some of these social media things where people are presenting and displaying and almost breaking news information before it gets announced through any other kind of medium. I guess my question to you is, what kind of impact does that have to sports? And also, from some of us, from more of the traditional ways of getting that information, is it going to impact that?
I think it already has impacted it. And I think, you know, sports fans are so crazy and so intent on getting their news so quickly and information that social media has just really been a game changer. And sports fans have just, they've really made use of social media to its fullest extent again. It's just really been amazing. I'm just amazed every day when new things happen. And just this week, it got a lot of attention because the top high school basketball player in the nation announced his college decision, which was kind of in doubt there, which college he was going to go to. And he announced that they allowed one reporter in the gymnasium when he made the announcement. And this local reporter was able to post it on Twitter. And the funny story was, I don't know if you followed it at all, that he went from about 1,000, he was just a small town newspaper reporter. He went from about 1,000 followers when they found that people found out he was going to be the one Twittering the decision. He bloomed up to over 16,000 right before the announcement was made. And then even he got a little laugh out of it. As soon as the announcement was made, his Twitter account followers started falling like the stock market back in the before the Great Depression, and he even made some tweets making fun of it. So it's just really amazing how sites like Twitter and Facebook just open up a whole bunch of new avenues and just really give sports fans what they want.
You know, I guess, Rick, when it comes to my sports news and information, I'm still part of the more traditional methods because I don't like getting it in chunks. So I enjoy maybe in the evening watching a little ESPN news or local sports, television broadcast, and kind of get it all in one string. That way it's not chipping away at my day or getting fragments here and fragments here, and I just kind of get it all at once.
Hey, I think that's the more traditionalist point of view. The new media more point of view is they get it all day long and in various times when something happens, then they get that information. Yesterday, a former NFL running back, Chuck Muncy, died. That was on Twitter in a matter of minutes, and that was spreading like wildfire. That's how I found out about it. And anything, articles and polls that get taken and even the results of games, a lot of times it's easier to just get them if you're following the right people on Twitter than it is than searching for them on the internet. So Twitter has just become just a search engine and a lot more than that, just an information source. It's really amazing, and I'm amazed by it every day. And it's forced newspapers and TV to you know, really get on their game, I think, to make sure that they're up to date on things. And yeah, there is a lot of stuff on Twitter that's garbage and wrong and stuff too. You really got to make sure that confirm your sources, I guess, but that's a problem. And even newspapers and TV have made mistakes in the past, so I don't think that's anything new.
As a final thought, Rick, you know, for me, it's not real critical to know this information instantaneously 4 or 5 hours later is okay for me. However, for somebody like you that's a sports journalist, that's a real advantage and a leg up.
Yeah, and I remember during the Olympics, you were trying to stay off the internet looking for results as they were happening hours ahead of us, and you'd like watching them in the evening. So you were patient because you wanted to see the stuff play out in front of your eyes rather than just see a result on the internet.
Correct.
Yeah, interesting.
Technology has changed a lot of things, even as we watch it on TV, Rick. There's been an example of recent where it's actually affected golf. Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, yeah. And it's actually put a new rule into the rules of golf, which is, I mean, the rules of golf are something that hasn't changed in over centuries, I mean, of playing the sport. These rules are almost written in stone, and they've added a new technology rule into professional golf, where if a rule violation is caught on television after the fact, they're not disqualifying the player, which is something they would have done in the past. Now, if a rule is determined to be broken by someone on catching it on TV, it's a two-shot penalty, and the person is allowed to stay in the tournament. And that's what happened to Tiger Woods at the Masters, and it kind of hurt his momentum a little bit, and he didn't win the tournament. And I think maybe that was not all to blame, but partly to blame for that. Not that, not to take away anything from Adam Scott or anyone else that finished ahead of Tiger. It's just amazing that with high definition, big screen televisions, there's people sitting there watching golf, especially looking for rules violations, because golf is kind of unique. The players are supposed to police themselves and call their own infractions and such. So it's just amazing that they've made a quick decision and added that rule in now almost on the fly. So I know you're a fan of golf, Steve, and I don't know if you're one of those people that sits there looking for rules violations, but there's people out there that do it. And now a player, by making an honest mistake, they know they're not going to get kicked out of the tournament. They just have a penalty, but they can still keep playing. So I guess that's kind of a consolation prize.
I guess I'm kind of mixed on this one. You know, I watch golf for the entertainment and, the competitiveness of golf. Certainly attempt to fix my own swing, which will never happen. I think for most of us that are, quote, duffers, I'm not even sure we understand the rules enough to even be doing something like that. But for those that are, from a perspective of an organization, let's say like the PGA, I'm not sure that I find value in letting the audience partake in calling rules violations. It would be like football. Are we going to have an audience review of a play? If you take it in that context. Now, certainly the good side of this is that, players aren't going to be disqualified, which is a good thing. You know, I still think that golf needs to be self-policing, and it has its own rules officials and those kinds of things. If players ask for assistance, they get it in those determinations. But I'm not sure I want this integration of the viewer audience embedded into the outcome of my sports.
That's what's unique to golf, is there's not people with striped jerseys on the course making rules calls. The players are supposed to make their own calls, and honesty and integrity is part of the sport. There are marshals on the course, which will help the players, but that's what makes golf so unique, is they're not policed out there by a uniformed referee or umpire or official. So that's really, really unique to golf, and it just really opens up Pandora's box and just really opens up the fact that technology has really now even changed a rule in the sport of golf. Just amazing. And as we take a break here real quick for Amazon.com and the studio affiliate link here, if you're doing any shopping on Amazon, it's netcaststudio.com/live for any and all of your needs. There's no extra cost to you, and it helps support the studio and the shows that it brings to you and the enjoyment you have from listening to shows like this or any other shows on the network. It's netcaststudio.com/Amazon, and we're proud to bring you that and Amazon help out with affiliate links like that. It's great that they do that and just do all your shopping on Amazon and use the affiliate link. And Steve, I know you're a big supporter of Amazon, and it's good to have them as an affiliate.
You know, we normally don't take on affiliates or any kind of sponsorship unless we use the products, we trust the company, and this is one that we truly do. I mean, it's a fantastic company when it comes to product pricing and customer services. So I'm just tickled to have them on board.
Yeah, it is great to have them.
Rick, when we were talking about the golf, when I think about spectators actually being at these events, and then couple that with, you know, today was Google I.O., and they came out with a lot of things. And, you know, one of the things that is being discussed a lot is Google Glass, you know, which is the eyewear, the so-called internet-connected eyewear. So when we have people at these events using Google Glass, that could take on a totally new, different context to these events also.
Yeah, it really could. And I'm not as up to speed on Google Glass as some people, or I don't know if you are, Steve, but it's a nifty product. It's a nifty idea. I don't know how viable a product it is, and I don't know how people are going to react to it as it becomes a consumer product. It's just kind of still in the test phases. But basically, you have a screen above your eye with a pair of kind of fake glasses. I mean, I guess for sports, being at the game, watching replays, having a Skype call with somebody through the lens in your glass, and taking pictures with the glasses from point of views that we've never had before, it opens up some interesting possibilities, to say the least.
On a little broader scale, Rick, I'm not sure socially we're ready for Google Glass or any kind of this kind of technology. It to me, it actually goes from big brother to everybody's a brother. You know, if I go in to have a conversation with somebody, for example, and they're wearing Google Glass, I have no idea what they're doing, what they're recording, anything. I'm going to ask them to remove them, and please don't talk to me or be around me with those darn things on. I don't think it's socially acceptable yet, and there's a long ways to go just in changing our culture when it comes to this kind of technology.
I think so, but I think they said the same thing about other products when they came out as well, including the television and maybe the Sony Walkman was a big product, how people were able to put earphones on and tune out people and tune out the rest of the world and listen to music. And that's similar to this, maybe. I think people already don't pay close enough attention to when people are talking to them or they're somewhere, and this just gives them another way to not pay attention to a lecture or to a speech or to a commercial or a live sporting event. It makes you wonder, do they really need now to be doing like three things at one time?
No, because, you know, we do talk about multitasking, but as I've talked about before in other shows, multitasking is truly a misnomer. The human being can't do it. They can't do two things at once. But you mentioned a couple things that's kind of interesting in terms of the advantage, and I can think of a couple things that might be kind of neat. You know, let's say, for example, you're at a NASCAR race, and you can tune into your favorite driver and watch their, you know, in-camera car while being in the audience. The other thing, what do you think about, for example, NFL referees wearing this type of apparatus for getting better vision or being able to look at, instant replay immediately without having to go to the sideline and go under the hood and those kinds of things?
But so there's a lot of possibilities with that, and I could see that possibly coming out someday. People at a concert wearing it, and if you're sitting far away, it would project the closer up image of the artist you're watching, or if you're sitting in a bad seat at a sporting event, it may give you a better view of the balls and strikes or something. I mean, it's just there seems to be so many possibilities. That's why it seems a little scary.
Yeah, there's a lot of possibilities, but I'm still concerned about the social side of it. I think there's going to be a big backlash. Certainly, techies are going to start off with it, and it's going to eventually progress to more and more people using these types of devices. But I don't think we're anywhere close to it.
Well, there are privacy issues, and basically, what it gives you are a lot of great topics to talk about.
Well, isn't that true? And
yeah,
you know, also, Rick, more and more delivery of content is starting to come through individual applications. And, you know, ABC has recently announced that they're going to do live air news and sports through their own application. By doing so, do you think that helps or hinders an organization, for example, like ABC?
Boy, I think that helps them. And this is the only thing. If you, for people that made that decision to get rid of cable, this is really the only thing they were missing out on were live sports and their live local news. You could not get those really with any live streaming app or website. So now if ABC's going with that with an app, that is one less reason to not get rid of cable when you can watch live sports, any live sports, NBA, college basketball, IndyCar racing, ice skating, whatever they have on live on an app. That was something that was not really available if you didn't have cable, and also live local news. That was, I mean, a lot of elderly people, they love watching that 10 o'clock, 6 o'clock news, and that was one of the reasons they would keep cable or keep their broadcast television, just to see those news programs. And, I mean, this is potentially huge in the world of sports. So sports fans that always said we would never get rid of cable because of, the sports fans have to watch the events live. This is something that they're paying very close attention to.
You know, myself, I'm nowhere close to doing any cord cutting because the content is just not available anywhere else, though I'm hoping one day, but it will never happen, that satellite and cable TV will give you a smorgasbord and let you, you know, refine and pick what you want versus these well-designed packages that throw you into a tantrum because you're paying such a high price to watch only 5 or 6 channels that you're, you know, really desiring. The only disadvantage, Rick, I see of potential live stream apps is, depending what you're into, then perhaps, for example, your mobile device will be full of, you know, potentially hundreds of apps just to watch individual things.
Yeah, and we kind of have that menu picking right now a little bit. If you really make use of your DVR on your TV, you can tape things when you're not around, tape things, and then when you're ready to watch television, you can pick and choose and watch things at that point. But they're not live, like you said, so that's the little drawback there when it comes to sports, because it's hard to watch a sporting event after you already know the result of it. So that's been the number one complaint of tried and true sports fans, is they have to watch that event live, and now it appears they're going to get their wish with that. And as we wrap up here, it's me and Steve talking with just some Q&As here tonight on a Wednesday night and having fun. And Steve, I always like asking my guests the one gadget or the one piece of technology they can't live without. I'm not going to ask you that, but I'm just going to say, as of right now or in recent weeks, recent months here, what's your favorite piece of technology that's come out maybe that you own?
It's going to be my Roku.
And
it kind of ties into what we were just talking about, because my Roku lets me select the channels and information that I want and that are of importance to me, and I can view it when I want, but certainly not based on a, you know, a sports scale like we talked about. But I'd also have to put on the same playing field my new Samsung Smart TV, because it also has, quote, Roku function built into it also, you know, with all the smart apps and the streaming you can do. But for me, it's definitely my Roku.
Best thing about the Roku is the price point on it. They've come out, what, $50 or under $50 for one, and it's it just really opens up a whole new world for viewing on specialty programs, internet TV shows, internet radio shows. It's I think when people use it and they really just play around with it, they're just really surprised by the amount of programming and the amount of things that are on there.
You know, it's almost limitless. And we also got to throw in there, Rick, that all of Netcast Studio production content is on there too. So it's a great device. Certainly a drawback is if you have low bandwidth, then you're probably not going to appreciate what the device can truly do. You know, this new Roku 3 is just a superstar.
Yeah, I love it. I got one for Christmas after holding out. We're kind of waiting for a better one to come out, and I couldn't be more pleased with it. I use it. If I don't use it every day, I'm using it 3-4 times a week. So I just really enjoy it, and enjoyed having you on here tonight, Steve. And tell people they can go over to netcaststudio.com, check out all the shows that are available, a lot of new episodes, and a lot of neat stuff on there, doing a good job with the site and the new podcast and internet broadcast directory that Netcast studio has set up called Two Thumbs Up Media, and that's twothumbsupmedia.com. And talk about the variety of things available and shows available. Two Thumbs Up Media gives you the whole spectrum, doesn't it?
Well, it really does. And Rick, it's basically, let's call it a podcast directory. Content creators go in and they post their own information about what kind of content they have and how to locate them. And, you know, from a listener point of view, there's not many places that you can go to find content that you might be interested in. So you can go to twothumbsupmedia.com. You can look up various, all the information by keyword or by category. We have dozens of categories in, you know, technology and sports and religion and you name it. And so it becomes a very finite tool to help you locate, you know, content that you might be interested in.
And of course, all the Netcast Studio shows are listed on there. So if I went there and typed in Andy Griffith, Steve, would a podcast come up about the Andy Griffith Show?
Yes, indeed.
Wow. You guys really do have everything on there.
I think we do.
Unbelievable. And it's not only just a great site, it's a great attractive site, easy to use, and can't say enough good things about it. Steve, appreciate you coming on short notice and talking a little sports technology tonight as we move through the week.
Appreciate it, Rick.
Just want to let everyone know they've been listening to the Tech of Sports podcast, a Netcast Studio production.